and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 415 for Wednesday, the 30th of July, 2014. I'm Dave Neal. After a week's sabbatical, I returned to the show, and as always, on the end of the line, is the ever-present on Motopod these days, from the desert of Oman, Harry Lloyd. Hello, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. As you say, ever-present. I seem to be the one who has the most free time, so people are probably getting a bit sick of my voice at this point, but you're kind of stuck with it for the second, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I guess. But
well, I enjoy our conversations, mate, even if people still seem to be listening to the show, so you're not doing a bad job.
Yeah, I guess we're trucking along. But
we're doing all right.
Yeah, we have a pretty big show. Jim went out to a flat track event and has gotten us some interviews from that, so get to see how the other half live, as they say.
The legend is Jay Springsteen.
Yeah, we don't usually cover too much dirt stuff, but Jim had the chance to go to this, and he seized it with both hands, so hopefully everyone enjoys those interviews.
Yeah, fantastic. I've not listened to those yet, so when I listen back to the show, I'll catch them then. I like to listen to them edited in, so rather than listen to them in the raw, let you work your magic on them. And then your voice is sounding good this week. You've lost the echo. What have you done?
I've spent about a day fiddling around with microphone settings. And so now I don't want to bash my head in with a table leg every time I edit the podcast. So that's a plus.
So you're not sat there with your pants on your head or a cardboard box over you or under a sheet or something daft like that?
No, that was all just me being a bit stupid and not really thinking about the problem. Sometimes it's best just to, you know, sit down and have a good think about what's going wrong.
It's always good to sit and think.
Yeah, exactly.
Always. And seamlessly, that should really take us into listener feedback, because people are really putting some thought into the listener feedback that we've been getting over the last few weeks. For you guys listening, if you want to get in touch with the hosts, we are motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts, to myself, to Harry, to Jim, to Martin, to Jules. And you will end up with a plethora of replies, invariably, depending on what time zone we're in, what work mode we're in, and where we are. But invariably, you do get a decent set of replies.
Yeah, it's been a bit slow the last week with replies, but unfortunately, everyone's kind of a bit busy with real life stuff. But
hopefully
that'll settle down, and we can respond to emails like these excellent ones from Mike Moyahan, who sent in a fair few emails. I'm not sure Mike got any replies to this email, but I personally didn't reply because I thought it'd be best to save it for the show. So sorry, Mike, if you were hankering for a reply, but you know, we're talking about it on the show, so that's not too bad.
And unfortunately, I've been at work for the past fortnight, so my replies have been few and far between. So yeah, apologies from me as well, Mike.
But anyway, we'll jump straight into this one. So as we've kind of said on several different editions of Motopod, World Superbikes is kind of struggling a bit, and even some of the riders, particularly Alex Lowes, he was tweeting about how to get our British fans back into World Superbike. But anyway, to Mike's email, the opening line is, "What's up with World Superbike? There are a few reasons why the series is failing, and they all centre on the manufacturers. No factory teams. Hey, if it isn't important to the factories, how can it be important to the fans? Honda left, Yamaha left, Ducati left. BMW's there for a bit, but they got bored. This is a telling message. If the manufacturers can't be bothered and instead put all their efforts in MotoGP, then what series should we be watching? Competition between bike makers. Yeah, there have always been supremely talented riders in World Superbike, back in the heyday and now in the present. The rider talent has never left, but the riders are only half the equation. Yes, we've seen support for Foggy, Tozon and Biaggi with all the banners in the stand, but we've seen similar fandom with t-shirts, flags and hats for Ducati, BMW and Honda. Hey, there are just as many people that cheer for the motorcycle brand as those that cheer for the rider. Yeah, there are private teams that are currently carrying the various marquees, but come on. It just isn't the same without the factory's direct involvement. It used to be war. Added rivalry. Yes, the riders want to beat the other riders, but in the golden days, there was an added pressure to represent your brand and to defend the other manufacturers. Don't tell me that Foggy not only wanted to beat Slight, but he also wanted to beat Honda. Lack of new models. part of the annual excitement of World Superbike wasn't just renewed rider clashes and upcoming talent, but also the new weapons bought to wage each year. Built to wage war each year. Forgot a word. The arrival of any new model was always major news. Something fans voraciously embraced, good or bad. Remember when the RC51 rolled out? The excitement? Was it going to be a Ducati killer or would it be a dog? Could the Japanese make a winning V-twin? What was Ducati's reaction? What new model or update would Corsa forge to combat the arms race? I loved it. Honda used to roll out a new from ground up bike every 4 years. With the RC51, it got updated after only 2 years, from the SP1 to the SP2. The current CBR1000RR, when did it come out? 2008? I'm a big Honda fan, and that, oh my god, was 7 years ago. When was the latest R1, Gixxa, etc.? The new Ducati Panigale was released with a whimper, when its chassis concept was already abandoned in MotoGP. Aren't we all gearheads? What do we have to be excited about? Seriously. Competition. Steel sharpens steel. Yeah, but Aprilia built a rocket, and can they really relish in victory in recent championships when the other makes have not brought their best effort? Deserving winners, to be sure, but isn't there a but, a pause? Wouldn't it be much sweeter if the world's largest bike maker and Ducati were giving their best effort and Aprilia still beat them? Now with Kawasaki, they're alone in the sandbox with their Japanese schoolmates not even bothering to play.
Great analogy.
I understand costs have to be controlled, but you can still do that and have the factories participate. And we need models to get excited about. That the factories are passionate about racing, the only place where we see new bikes released each year and where the factories compete against each other, MotoGP. The fans gravitate towards it. And the top flight competition from every perspective, every angle, entry level. That's what World Superbike needs. Mike.
Fantastic email.
Yeah, I think that his point about how there are no new models... It is very valid, you know. It's unless you're Aprilia, Ducati, or Kawasaki, you're racing as Mike says, at least 5-year-old bikes with some minor tweaks. But
the Fireblade is a perfect example. 2008. That's what HM Plant were running with Cal Crutchlow on board the last time he was in British Superbikes before he went off to World Supersport. It's an evolution of that model. It's not nothing has been redesigned from the ground up.
Just a couple of swing arm tweaks and this and
that. Yeah, exactly right. A little bit of cosmetics here and there, and obviously the new SP's come out as well, which has got, the road at least.
That's just fancy forks.
Yeah, it is. Exactly right. It's got gold forks. But really, there hasn't really been anything designed from the ground up. But also, what happened in 2008 still has a big bearing these days with the economic collapse.
Yeah, no.
We're still coming out of that, and the manufacturers haven't got the money that they had, in my opinion. They're not having the returns that they had. I know bike sales are starting to increase.
But they're not sports bikes.
But they dropped off. No, they're not. Did you read about that? The top 10 best-selling bikes in the UK?
It's all GSs and different adventure bikes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
There wasn't one sport bike in there.
No, and that's a massive pointer to what's going on, because they're all evolution. Is the ZX10R the most recent ground-up development bike?
I think
it is.
The Panigale, I think, is a year or two newer.
My apologies. Yes, the Panigale is, because that's still coming to the forefront, isn't it? But when you look at, as you said, from the Japanese point of view, the GSXR 1000 is the what are they on now? The L model?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue.
I'm trying to think what I had, but they're on. But it's still an evolution. Nobody's come out with a radically new design, because personally, the money isn't for me. I don't think the money's there to put it into R&D to redesign it. And they're also getting to a kind of a plateau of where else can they take it. They have MotoGP derived technology on board, and the actual street bike and production bikes, how much further do they develop them? How much further can they develop them, and what do they turn them into?
And it's
every time you see a bike come out, you think that's the pinnacle of what it is, and then they came out with something else. You know, the Fireblade started 20 odd years ago to the evolution of what it is now, but this must be the longest evolution of a blade without a radical redesign.
Yeah, and I think the problem in general is a bit of a snake eating its own tail, you know? The Japanese, well, manufacturers in general don't bring out new bikes, so no one watches World Superbikes. So then the companies say, oh, no one's watching World Superbikes, there's no point making a bike for this. So it's just this vicious cycle of...
Yeah, it's just a decreasing circle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. One, they go hand in glove with each other. Win on the Sunday, sell on the Monday, apparently.
But Ducati sales are the best they've been in years and years and years. And when was the last time Ducati won anything?
That links seamlessly to the Matt Oxley piece I read earlier on. We'll put that in the show notes. I'll bring that up onto my my laptop, because that's worth a point of worth discussion of Ducati and what they've won or haven't won since 2007. So we'll go on to that. That's a little side piece to it, but. There seems to be a downer on sports bikes in general, whether it's insurance, whether it's the cost. I mean, you're looking at forking out 10 and 11 grand for at least for a ZX10R or for a Topline Fireblade SP, or, you know, what a Panigale is, 14 grand, 13 grand?
Easily. And that's if you get just the basic one. There's the Tricolore, the S, all sorts of different fancy ones.
With the way things are at the minute, and people are still coming out of this economic slump. Seriously, apart from the considerably well off, how can the man on the street, and it's always been the case, where, and I'm explaining this to someone the other day, whereas car racing has always been perceived as the sport of the privileged.
Yeah.
Motorcycle racing is at the back of a van with a fag, working man's sport. It's the perception of motorcycle racing. You think, you look back at pictures of Joey Dunlop, of Barry Sheen, it'll turn up at the back of a transit van and race.
Yeah.
Mike Hailwood. And, you know, that's the perception of the public. So
yeah, car racing hasn't been like that for 50 years, but in motorcycle racing it was like that till 20 years ago, if not more recent.
Well, yeah, but you look at BSB and places like that, people still turn up out the back of a van and race.
Yeah, especially with the roads.
Yeah. And that's how they like it. That's how they were brought up. So the market that they're looking at hasn't got that kind of, or in general, doesn't seem to have that kind of expendable income to spend between 10 and 15 grand on a top level sports bike, when you can get a real good multi-purpose, you know, a Ducati Multistrada, or something that's all round that they can ride all year round, rather than from April to September when the roads start to get a bit wet and a bit nasty.
Yeah.
Because that's the, you know, I've had sports bikes, and that's what you do. You ride them from March to October, let's say.
Yeah, well, that, and if you can only afford one vehicle to commute to work, you're not going to buy, you know, a Panigale Superleggera and sit there in traffic hunched over breaking your back. You're going to, as you say, get a Multistrada where, you know, you can sit quite comfortably, you can see above traffic.
Yeah, and you have more control, and you know, like you say, it's going for comfort over style.
Hmm.
So, yeah, if the market is changing, and that has a knock-on effect to World Superbikes, no question. But how do you change that?
I don't know. I mean, there are some manufacturers, you know, Yamaha is obviously planning to come back either next year or the year after. So they're kind of coming back. But you have to wonder, how hard are they really going to go at it? Like, is there really a point to winning World Superbike anymore?
And are they really going to come back as a full factory effort? Or is it going to be Belgarda Yamaha dressed up, you know, picking up some go faster bits out of Yamaha Holland and putting something together? Which is, as we said before the show started, is the Goldbet BMW of last year was the pretty much the bulk of the Belgarda Yamaha setup.
Mm.
And so the guys are still in the paddock. The guys are still around. And then they've moved to various places for this year, obviously. Some have stayed with BMW, but the essence is that Belgarda Yamaha are, for want of a better phrase, still in the paddock. It's not going to take much for them to go down to Lesmo to open up the doors and start trading again. But if that R1 is competitive enough, and if it does, like you say, and if it does come out, this... for 2015, which the last I heard it was going to, but I've not seen anything since. I don't keep up to speed with with the bike business as much as I should do, really. It's more for the racing for me at the moment.
Yeah.
But that was the last I heard anyway.
It'll be interesting to see if Yamaha coming back in does give it this a bit more of a kick. But, you know, Aprilia seem to be focusing their efforts more towards MotoGP, so Aprilia's involvement in World Superbike's probably going to fade a bit. Kawasaki will obviously probably still stay there because, you know, they're able to dominate, so that's probably good for them. And there's no real need for them to come into MotoGP. But BMW, they seem pretty done with all forms of racing, apart from, you know, little spatterings here and there.
Yeah. But they also, do you think there's the Kawasaki domination is putting people off?
Maybe.
Because they dominate BSB, they dominate National Superstock, they dominate the World Superbike Championship to the greater point.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a point of, you know, companies like Honda and Yamaha say, okay, sure, Kawasaki, have fun in World Superbikes. We're over here winning in MotoGP. So, you know,
therefore the series isn't important enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'd assume that manufacturers like that think. Because Honda obviously has almost no factory support for the Pata squad. Obviously, even the Japanese superbike Fireblades are a higher spec than that of Jonathan Rea and Leon Haslam.
She's incredible.
Yeah, so, you know.
So really, World Superbikes then, for want of a better phrase, is a privateer championship, isn't it?
More or less. I mean, I don't follow Japanese superbike at all, but from what I've heard is that Yamaha and Honda definitely try out their hot bits in Japanese superbike with Japanese riders and then just don't really worry that much about World Superbikes.
And that's how things have changed. Because when they had the factories in World Supers and British Supers, there was always a telling point after this weekend that's just gone that all of a sudden the Hondas got that little bit quicker.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine...
Always quicker after Suzuka.
Yeah, I can't imagine that any teams, even the air quotes factory teams in World Superbike, are going to get that big a boost.
No, but they used to when they were factory teams.
Yeah, because obviously they roll out even hotter trick bits for Suzuka.
Necessary faster.
Exactly. The name of my MCN fantasy road race team.
Indeed it is. I haven't looked at mine for a couple. Mind you, we covered it before, didn't we? Because they've been on some break. That's
okay.
Yeah,
we have. But I should probably go check that because, yeah.
You need to make some changes.
Probably.
But yet the rivalry is a good point as well.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was kind of thinking about this. World Superbikes.
I was rambling.
I was just thinking, you know. If you ask a rider and say British Supersport, you know, what do you want to be? They'll all say MotoGP champion. Who says they want to be World Superbike champion?
Nobody these days.
Well, unless you're already in World Superbikes and have kind of missed the boat on GP.
And you only say that if it's your only option and that's the road you need to go down to get where you're going.
Mm.
But nobody sets out, unlike they have done in the last 10 years, your James Toseland's of this world, your Neil Hodgson's, you had a clear path because MotoGP, there wasn't the crossover so much. But you did exactly. You're exactly right. You look at, you speak to Neil Hodgson, you speak to James Toseland, Carl Foggett. They set out to be World Superbike champion when it had a little bit more weight to it.
Yeah, because
not discrediting anything that that Tom Sykes has done or Max Biaggi or the champion since.
Well, I can guarantee that Max Biaggi did not grow up thinking that he'd be a double World Superbike champion. I'm sure he had dreams of being a double MotoGP champion. It's just that, unfortunately, it didn't work out in MotoGP. So, took the next best thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it always will be the next best thing. But there was a time when they were a little closer in regard to each other than they are now. It's very, very much the second cousin twice removed at the moment. Whereas previously it was maybe, you know, nephew, first cousin. It was never his brother.
Oh, that analogy's... We should stop that analogy there. It's going to get very complicated otherwise.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than family. So, no, we're good. But they are all part of the same family now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mike's email, fantastic. It hits a nail on the head with no factory teams. And without the factory teams, there's no competition between the manufacturers.
Yeah, it's just a bit stale.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly that. You know, and the lack of competition, yeah, agreed. It's a walk, not a cakewalk for Kawasaki, but you can guarantee, you almost put your mortgage on the fact that one of them will be in the top three, and invariably one of them will be on the top step of the podium, which, you know, frustrating for Chris Pike, Jonathan Ray, Leon Haslam on the Hondas, because the Kawasakis are making them look ordinary. And those bikes that Tenkate put together are far from ordinary.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out Kawasaki and Aprilia and remove the four factory riders, then all that racing is incredibly close and have a different winner almost every weekend.
Yes, agreed.
Because yeah, that battle for, you know, fourth through, I'd guess, seventh more, it's always intense. You know, sometimes you have Jonathan Rea, sometimes you have Eugene Laverty, sometimes you have Chaz Davies, all sorts of different bikes, different nationalities.
Which in turn actually mirrors BSB as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well,
if you take out Shaky, Josh Brooks, and James Ellison.
It mirrors most race series. I mean, if you take out Marquez, Pedrosa, Rossi, the fight gets a lot more intense.
Yeah, true. That's very true. I was trying to think. I've got just a small sense of deja vu that we've been down this road before.
How there are aliens.
And I can't remember if we got a bollocking for it.
Probably.
It also reminds me of Christian Idden. It's something he put out last year on Twitter, and it's gone now, but he got the mickey taken out of him for weeks after that. It's like, if one more person had fallen off, I'd have got on the podium. And it's something like that. And it went on for ages where people were throwing things at him. So I'll bypass that one. Do you remember it?
No. What did Guy Martin say after he came? If buts and maybes were pots and pans, we'd all be scrap metal salesmen. I think that's what Guy Martin said.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's the same as if my granddad had tits, he'd be my grandma.
Exactly.
Well, brilliant. Thank you for the email, Mike. It's very kind of you. And we really appreciate your input. Hopefully that's stirred up a little bit of discussion for everybody else to get in touch with us at motopod@motopodcast.com. Let us know your thoughts on World Superbikes, and we'll read them out next week.
Yeah, and the Superbike thing does seem to get people pretty riled up. Some people do really defend World Superbikes as, you know, the premier series, so it's interesting to see everyone's take on the various series and why they think they're good and why they think they're maybe a bit bad.
And why you can convince me to watch it. as any of the regular listeners to the show will know, that I really do, at the moment, struggle with World Superbikes. Whether it's busy home life, whatever it is, but it always seems to... If I don't get to watch it live, I usually, invariably, don't get to see it.
I'll cancel pretty much anything if there's a MotoGP race on. But if it's a World Superbike race,
Exactly right.
We can go for a date, sure. Oh, yeah, nothing on.
If it's raining outside and there's nothing else yet. But I would never, ever substitute Formula One for it, though. Ever.
I don't know. To give F1 its due, it was an okay race in Hungary.
No, what have I done? I did hear that. I did hear it was a good race, but I'm just not a four-wheel man.
Nah, it's pretty boring.
Never have been.
It's pretty boring. To be honest, I only really watch it because one of my friends at uni watches it, and it's just interesting to see the differences between F1 and MotoGP.
Yep, they've got double the wheels that we have.
And much bigger motorhomes.
Yeah. I didn't think you could get much bigger motorhomes.
Oh, no, these things, like, their hospitality suites are full on.
Like, oh yeah, when you look at through those, how do they get them? And they just turn into two Arctics. It is like a living version of Transformers.
Yeah, that, and like if you ever go into a MotoGP hospitality, most of the food is just, you know, a buffet. But at F1, all the food is a la carte. They have a chef making food for you.
Wonder where all the money is.
Oh, it's in Bernie Eccleston's wife or whatever.
Yeah, in her bank account.
Yep,
and his daughter. Yeah, saw a picture of his daughter the other day.
Yes, she's She'll be successful in life.
Yes, in various ways. Moving swiftly on. News.
Yes. So the Moto GP2, Moto3 silly season, it's continuing to slowly rumble along. Obviously, with the summer break, this is when most of the deals get discussed and they'll start to leak out just before Indy and after Indy and all throughout the rest of the season. So there's not too much at the second, but there's one or two things, especially in the lower classes, to touch on briefly. The first of which is Alex Rins.
Sorry, were you waiting for me then?
No, I was just going. The first of which is Alex Rins. He's quite a hot property. He's no longer managed by Emilio Altzamora, so that's quite interesting. He's obviously still racing with the team, nothing wrong there, but Altzamora is no longer his manager, so he has kind of broken away a bit from the Honda path. Now it seems that Alex Marquez is the real favoured son, but Alex Rins has offers in Moto3 from the Red Bull KTM IO squad. Alex Rins has said that he hasn't really gotten on that well with the Honda Moto3 bike this year, so maybe a switch back to KTM would do him good. But he's not too keen to stay in Moto3, it seems. But in Moto2, he has offers from basically every big Moto2 team. He allegedly has an offer from Mark VDS, from Pons, from Italitrans, and from Aspar. Obviously, all of those will almost definitely be running Kalex bikes next year. And I'm assuming that Kalex will continue to be the bike to have. Just an interesting point on Mark VDS. Their Moto2 squad, currently they have obviously Teeter Abbott set in stone. The other rider looks like it will probably be Alex Marquez, but then there's a bit of a rumour that they could run a three-bike squad, as they will almost certainly not be running their Moto3 team next year, and that third seat could either be Alex Rins or Mika Kallio.
Interesting.
Yep.
Like that.
Yep. So that could be interesting. Alex Rins also had an offer from Yamaha Tech 3, or Tech 3, if we want to get all French. But a combination of the whole Moto3 to MotoGP risk and then Red Bull versus Monster put an end to that. So Alex Rins, he's looking for a Moto2 ride, is what he's preferring.
I think that's the way to go. I still think that's the route to follow.
You think?
This Jack Miller to LCR, I don't know. I'm not sold on it.
Could I?
If he proves me wrong, yeah, exactly. If it does, then great. You know, I'm not massively against it. That it, you know, I'm not blinkered enough to think that it should be that it goes Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP. If somebody goes and makes a success of it, it will open the floodgates. If he goes and fucks it up, yeah, then there is a path to follow. It shows that after the last, however, you know, eons since the series pretty much began, that there is a progression to go through before reaching the big class, whether you go through the World Superbike route or whether you go Moto3, Moto2. But, great. You know, I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I just hope it happens for the right reasons and it's not painful.
David Emmett wrote quite a good article that I'll try and find and include on the show notes about when Hopper came into MotoGP. He obviously came in as a 19-year-old, a lot like Jack Miller would, and Hopper started riding the Red Bull Yamaha 500.
He did.
And, yeah, Moto Matters and a couple of other people have kind of said that, you know, maybe if Hopper had 1 or 2 years in 250s or World Superbikes or something, that his career would have been even more successful than just jumping straight on that.
It was too much too soon.
Yeah.
The DVD, faster, worth a watch to understand what he went through in those early days.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely had one or two big crashes there.
But as you say, we don't want Jack Miller to end up that way. So if he can go in there, he's a different breed, he's a different rider. I don't think he's a Casey Stoner. I don't think he's a Danny Pedrosa. Just purely on my opinion, but I read, you know, there's something in there that says that, you know, is he really going to do this right? I'm just playing devil's advocate, you know. I hope to be proven wrong. I don't want to be proven right, but at all. But I just think, really, What about you? What are your thoughts? You know, he's as a fellow Aussie, and you know, you followed his career for the last few years. What are your thoughts?
I really want to see him in MotoGP, just kind of as a bit of, you know, like, I guess, an academic case, if I'm being all fancy, of just how can you how can you make, is the jump from Moto3 to MotoGP, is it doable or is it too risky? You know, lots of the people, obviously, lots of people talking about this, including us, it's just a lot of guesswork. Like, there's no other, yes. It's not like Sandro Cortese went from Moto3 as Moto3 world champion to MotoGP, and we can say, oh yeah, you know, Cortese here to write shit time, so, you know, Miller will probably have a shit time too. I think that we do need that one person to take a bit of a risk.
The litmus test.
Yeah, exactly. Because Hervé Poncharal, he was getting asked a fair few questions about if he'd take Cal Crutchlow back in Yamaha Tech 3. And he said, you know, no, we're really looking at Moto 2 and even Moto 3 riders to bring up. And I think we are. I think after Marquez, we're going to see a trend of riders getting not much younger than Marquez, but I think that 19 and 20 and 21, that's going to be the prime age when you want to bring someone into GP now.
Yes, rather than interesting to look at what the average age is in Moto 2. That's the average age has got to be mid 20s.
Yeah, I'll look into that for the next show. I might take Mika Kallio and Ant West and Alex De Angelis out because they're pretty old. But otherwise,
careful.
Old for races.
Thank you.
But
for the top runners, and you know, without the guys that are heading 30 plus, it would just be an interesting. You've got plenty of time in the desert to do that, really.
I'm sure.
I'm going away for the weekend with the family, so I haven't got time.
I still have some of my high school math buried away in my head, so that'll probably be enough.
We're working out averages.
Yeah, mean, median, and mode. They're math terms, I think.
Oh, get you. Yeah. I'm impressed. Suitably so. What else are you going to surprise me with? But yeah, it's interesting to see that and what the average age is of Moto 2. We know the average age of Moto 3 is going to be sort of 18, 19.
Yeah,
but
sure.
If that's the age that the GP teams are looking at, 19, 20, if the average age at Moto 2 is 23, 24, 25, chances are they're going to be overlooked. You know, for a fact, Sam Lowe's 23. Isn't he the same age as his brother?
Probably. I mean, I've heard they're...
I think so.
I've heard they were born quite close together. But
2 minutes, by all accounts. Anyway, I'm not having a laugh. I apologise.
We'll come back to this age thing when we talk about Suzuka, because there's a...
Yeah,
that sort of thing to touch on. But anyway, back to Moto 3 news.
Your friend.
Yes, friend who still won't pick up his phone, so I'm not sure we'll get an interview before he flies to Indianapolis on Monday. But Binder seems to be one of these riders, along with Alex Rins, who's in the hot seat for the Red Bull KTM ride to replace Miller and maybe even Danny Kent. It looks like Hanneke and Nicky Io will stay in their respective seats for next year, but certainly Jack Miller will be moving on. And Danny Kent, I don't know, his results have obviously been quite mixed. He's also getting on and getting a bit too... He's already probably too big for Moto3, so you imagine that he might also look elsewhere. So Binder looks to be for one of those two factory seats.
Danny will be an interesting case next season to see where he ends up.
Yeah, does he go back to Moto2? Does he go to...
Will there be a seat for him?
Yeah. Who knows?
Roger Burnett.
Yeah, I'm sure Roger Burnett knows.
I'm sure he does. I could ask. Not that he'll tell me. And also, there needs to be a space in the Red Bull KTM or the Husqvarna for the Red Bull rookies winner. Does it not? Is it a guaranteed run?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's a... I'm not sure if it is a guaranteed run. I think it's just you're highly likely.
Ah, okay.
I'd have to check that, though. I'd have to check that. But yeah, you have to remember that with Red Bull rookies, sometimes there's the thing of they're too young to move up to MotoGP and stuff.
Yes.
Well, not MotoGP, Moto3.
The bulk of the previous winners have gone through the IO KTM squad, though.
Yep, definitely.
But speaking of previous Red Bull rookies runners, Livio Loy sadly departed from the Mark VDS Moto 3 outfit. He will be replaced by Jorge Navarro.
Yes. As we guessed several weeks ago.
Indeed. Formerly of the CV Championship in Spain. And is he not part of the Alicia Spargaro squad?
No.
That currently runs out there?
Nope. He runs the Iota bike. Iota make a Moto 3 bike that they had. Where was it? It was at Barcelona in 2013 is where they debuted it. It didn't race in 2013, but now it's racing in Sev this year, and he's doing pretty okay on it.
Ah, okay.
And
so who's the guy? Ah, he was the replacement for Nicky Ayo, wasn't it?
Gabriel
That's right.
Rodrigo.
Yeah, you can tell I've had a fortnight off.
But yeah, Jorge Navarro, he's doing quite well in Sev. He'll continue to race in the Spanish series alongside Moto 3. So, because I think he's currently challenging for the title, so
yes.
He'll be getting.
He's a damn good rider.
Yeah, he is, and he'll be returning to the Mark VDS squad on the Calyx KTM. So the KTM is, I don't know, back in boxes going to Austria or something.
Yeah. So the Red Bull rookie version, the KTM is, as you say, boxed up, sent back, and ready to sell to another customer.
Yeah, or maybe
strange.
Maybe it's off to a domestic championship. Who knows? But it's not going to be
Could
raced.
Be. No. How unusual. But yep, Jorge Navarro to replace Livio Loy at Mark VDS. Tech 3 are yet to decide on a second rider. They'll look to either keep Bradley Smith or, as you said earlier, look to Moto 2 and Moto 3 to keep the youthfulness coming through into MotoGP.
Yeah, we kind of touched on that already. I don't think there's too much more to say that other than we've already said. But some World Endurance news. The World Endurance Championship was meant to end with the 8 hours of Doha. However, that event has been cancelled, and so the event will end at the Le Mans 24-hour, which means that there's only two more rounds of the World Endurance Championship remaining.
I was going to say, because that's September. It's usually like the third week of September or something.
Yes, September 20th and 21st.
Ah.
And currently, okay. SRC Kawasaki are leading the World Endurance Championship with 55 points, followed by Yamaha Racing GMT 94 with 50 points. So it looks like one of them will win the championship. Apparently, World Endurance scoring is really weird.
Oh, yeah, you're out of my league on that one at the moment.
Yeah, I can't say I have more than a passing interest in World Endurance. I mean, I'll look at the pretty bikes and watch the start of the race, but I could not recite every team.
F1 for me. Watch the start, watch the finish.
Pretty much. Eugene Laverty is apparently being looked at for an Aprilia ride in MotoGP. It is the hot rumour, as we've said, that they will come back next year instead of 2016, buying out Paul Bird Motorsport for a cool €2 million. And Eugene Laverty is one of the riders being looked at. However, there's also rumours of Marco Melandri, of Alvaro Bautista, of Daniele Petrucci. So it could be anyone.
Yeah, unconfirmed rumor that I heard was Eugene Laverty and Alvaro Bautista.
Hmm.
Which, yeah. I hope that the Aprilia, I mean, it was always muted as the MotoGP bike, wasn't it, in World Supers. It was always the proving ground to make that step up to MotoGP. So it's not before time that they're returning. It's another manufacturer into the mix. And one that will hopefully sort of be challenging the top 10 before they know it. So yeah. To have two Aprilias back, two Suzukis, it's all great. But as we said with Mike Moynihan's email earlier on, that's where the factories are going and that's where they're putting all their efforts.
Exactly. And having Aprilia and Suzuki both coming in as air quotes new teams, you know, it'll give both of them a target to aim for. They'll obviously be looking to beat each other, both returning with similar
yes.
amounts of development, so that'll probably help the development of those two bikes as well.
Very much so.
Include the video in the show notes, but essentially it's Nicky Hayden talking about Nicky Hayden has had wrist surgery and will therefore miss the next two races, which are Indianapolis and Bruno, and Leon Camier, replacement rider extraordinaire, will replace him for those two rounds. essentially what I think the surgery was Nicky Hayden had several bones removed from his wrist to increase mobility. Which yes. doesn't sound good.
No. We've spoken previously about this, haven't we? And I've seen on social media of how a lot of people sort of thinking out loud of how much of a career Nicky's actually got left with this wrist injury. So, you know, you look at James Toseland and people, and you know, really, it's a difficult one.
Yeah,
you know, how long is he? He's obviously trying to prolong his career as best he can, but you know, it's not a good sign that he's missing two races already. Hopefully he'll come back stronger and the surgery will be a success. But from what I've gathered from reading on social media previously, it's quite a candid video. I don't know if it might have been Moto Matters himself that mentioned it, that more riders should do this. There's no PR bullshit on it. There's no bluster. It's Nicky Hayden talking about his wrist with nobody behind the camera going, "Don't say that." You know, and people nodding and shaking their head and doing the zip across the mouth. He's just talking candidly about it, which after the show, I will have a look through it. But it comes on good authority from Moto Matters plus others that it's worth a watch. So we'll put the link into the show notes on that one. So have a good look at that, and good luck to Leon Camier to replace him for the next two rounds.
Yeah, and Nicky Hayden does have a contract with the whatever it is M7 Drive Aspar team for next year, so we'll have to see if that does play out or what will happen there.
Indeed, Moto3 news. Antonelli has unfortunately broken his collarbone in a training accident. The Gresini Go and Fun Moto3 rider, who he's had his fair share of spills anyway this season, hasn't he?
Yeah, there are a couple of comments on Twitter of, "Oh, wow, that's a surprise."
But yeah, he is the Axel Pons of Moto3. Oh no, I mentioned Axel Pons again.
Axel Pons is a defence, as we've said. He hasn't actually crashed that much in recent races.
No, but if you throw enough mud, some of it's going to stick. But no, he hasn't. He's getting the message in that front, so I do retract that partially. But yeah, so unfortunately he's broken his collarbone in a training accident. No replacement mentioned as yet for Indy and Bruno.
I mean, it's a collarbone, so he'll probably be back because, you know, it's
worthwhile doing it. If you're going to do it on the summer break.
Yeah, there was a photo of him at an Italian domestic championship round with all the VR46 people, and he had his arm in a sling with, you know, one of those gauze patches. So clearly he's had it operated on. He didn't look the happiest boy in the world, but that's understandable when, you know, walking around with a broken collarbone.
Yeah, because he wants to be out there with the ladies and he's all strapped up looking a little bit sorry for himself. You know, it's understandable. I have to say, I have the same issue, really. Yeah, right. Red Bull are back as a main sponsor in MotoGP. The Repsol Honda will be renamed Repsol Red Bull Honda. Do I presume that's from the start of next season?
Yeah, I think. I was trying to figure it out 100% for sure. And it seems like it'll be from next season, but they might also be doing something for Indy, because obviously Indianapolis is the Red Bull Indianapolis Grand Prix or whatever it's called.
No, I think you're right. I think you nailed it. Yeah,
but it'll be you'll have the Red Bull Bull alongside the Repsol, so the Red Bull Bull on a motorcycle, that could look pretty cool.
Yeah, it could. Yeah,
obviously when Hopper,
as long as they don't use a primary school child to design it like they did at Aragon.
Yeah, obviously Hopper, he was on that Red Bull Yamaha when he came in, but that was kind of just, you know, like the logo sticker stuck on the side of the bike. But I think you could do something quite cool, you know, a charging Red Bull either side fading back into
the Red Bull bike. Yeah,
Repsol.
Red Bull Yamaha. That was a Red Bull Suzuki, but the Red Bull Yamahas are Crafar and Hager. Simon Crafar, Dunlop Grand Prix win, Donington Park.
I was getting
I can remember it because I interviewed him. That was part of the research.
But yeah, they did, didn't they?
Hager and Gary McCoy.
Yeah,
the Red Bull Yamaha, wasn't it?
Yeah,
but super slides out of the corner.
Yeah, but it's interesting because Red Bull are obviously quite prominent in F1 what with having an F1 team and a second yes. junior team. But in MotoGP, they're not really more than a helmet sponsor. It's mostly Monster Energy that's kind of the big sponsor in MotoGP. And as you talked about how, you know, car racing's kind of the fancy thing and motorcycle racing's a bit, you know, bit out the back of the truck, I think that also relates to, you know, Red Bull kind of markets itself as a high-class energy drink, perhaps to be mixed with an alcoholic substance in a nightclub. Whereas Monster Monster Energy is more, you know, yeah, we're in college and university, let's down these and go get some girls.
Have you tried the Monster Vodka?
I have drank literally every energy drink under the sun, occasionally with alcohol, although quite rarely, because that has ended very badly several times.
Like to try Going Fun with vodka.
I haven't tried Going Fun. I would class myself as a connoisseur of energy drinks.
I'll try and sort that out for you.
Happily.
I'll see what I can do. But if you think about the Repsol boys, when they're on the podium, they both have Red Bull. They always have Red Bull cans with them, don't they? So they've got the connection there anyway. So it would make sense in that respect.
The Tech 3 team, I think it was at Barcelona a couple of years back when Cal was on the front row on the podium. They got in trouble because there was a photo of them pouring water into an empty Monster Energy can, which obviously did not make a Monster too happy.
They don't do that, do they? They all run on these energy drinks. All the riders do. Because they all carry the drinks bottle, so they must be drinking it.
Yes.
Well, yes.
You know, some
they all
it's
want
just
taurine and L-carotene and 50% sugar in them.
It's just one of those things that, you know, everyone accepts. It's just like an open secret that they don't
it
really.
It is, yeah. I think Tommy Hill got rumbled for that as well in BSB into his Monster bottle. So, yes, it happens. But, yes, water is more necessary for a racer than before a race to hydrate. Simple as that.
Definitely.
It's a physical thing.
I'm sure that after a race, a Red Bull or any other energy drink is a very refreshing thing.
To replenish your stock, yes. But prior to that...
Yeah, I imagine I've had Red Bulls and then gone to the gym or gone for a run, and it's not a smart idea. You don't feel good.
Too much caffeine. Diuretic. Mm-mm. Yeah. Afterwards, maybe so.
Exactly.
Tell me about Indianapolis and Colin Edwards.
Okay, so I think it was at... Where was it? It might have been Jerez or something. But Kazari, the team owner of MGM, he apparently told Italian media that, you know, Colin Edwards was out. And this rumour has resurfaced. This rumour is care of Superbike Planet, which is in turn they're getting it from Italian media. So, you know, take this with basically the whole salt shaker. But there's some apparently mumblings that Colin Edwards could end his racing career after Indianapolis. So Indy could be
be a travesty.
His last ever MotoGP race. Yeah, it would be sad, but for the last 3 years, Colin's more or less been riding for money.
Yeah.
But
he needs to end it at the end of the season and go out in style, where people expect him to go, not disappear in a whimper and think, well, okay, Indy's my last round. But playing devil's advocate, Indy, the last American round of the season, why not? Gets the fans through the gates.
Yeah, exactly. After that, eh.
After that what?
Eh. I do hope that Colin can see out the season. He's an icon of the sport.
He is, and he's good on the interviews, and he needs to be. He is the paddock personality that the paddock needs.
Yeah, very much so.
He will be one of the very last of the outspoken after Cal.
Yeah. Definitely a different breed of riders to most of them who are quite PR trained. I did see Bradley Smith, however, on Twitter make a comment about female drivers that did not go down too well. So, you know, even the best PR still slip up occasionally.
It's a shame that they have to be edited and I can't think of the word that I'm after. But they're shadowed on Twitter and social media that you will delete that. It should be open to opinion. It's social media. They're humans, the same as you and I. They should be open to their opinion. It would make life so much more interesting. To let them have this, you know, they all have their thoughts, and they're all allowed their opinions, the same as we are. But as long as it's not bringing their manufacturer into disrepute and to their team owner and their team, then fair enough. But to pass comment on, you know, if they think someone's a dickhead, just say it.
Yeah, although I can understand why sweeping generalizations such as women are bad drivers would not be looked upon too kindly by the general public.
But it was a talking point.
Yeah, definitely was a talking point. I didn't check to see if he'd replied to any of the tweets, but some of them were quite angry.
I didn't see it, so I take your word for that. I've been out of the loop a little bit recently.
I think now is a good time to pause, and we will put in Jim Race's interviews. And yeah, bit of dirt track for everyone. Obviously, the Super Prestigio event will be occurring again this year with Brad the Baker Bullitt, Mark Marquez, and all the MotoGP boys. So maybe these interviews will help everyone prepare a little for that.
Zoom, zoom. Or brap, brap for dirt.
Jim Race here with Motopod for Josh Hayes to have a little bit of a chat about what's going on in the AMA. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Just finished up a pretty good weekend of racing, and so yeah, life's good. Can't complain, except for my wife's gone. She's in Japan, so when she gets home, life will be great.
Yeah, you're a little bit jealous of her running over there at Suzuka. You ever had an opportunity to do that yourself?
I haven't, and I might be just a touch.
Well, I heard she tumbled the bike down the track, and Shalina was kind of pissed because broke her half of the bike.
I got to see the video of it, and it's funny because there was about a 3-foot piece of the wall that you really can't hit.
Yeah.
Like, then you shouldn't hit, and she found it. So,
yeah. Well, by target fixation, perhaps?
Oh, no. She was flipping through the air and found her way there. She actually high-sided and crashed off the inside of the racetrack. So, it was an odd crash. I felt bad for her, but it was her first lap. So, I think she was kicking the can a little about that.
All right. Well, hopefully she's fine physically.
Yeah, no, I haven't talked to her. She's doing good. Qualifying's been a little tough. She's having a little bit of a hard time getting back up to speed, but, 4 hours is a long race. I believe Melissa will be starting, and she'll get plenty of time to get to work on it. So I have full confidence that she'll do just fine.
Cool. I was looking at the qualifying results for the 8-hour this morning, and it's really neat to see the mixture of riders on some of the teams. It's very cool.
Yeah, I got a lot of friends over there right now. You got the three Joshes.
Yeah.
All of these. You got Josh Brooks, Josh Hook, and Josh Waters. Waters seems to be really on it right now. He's riding really well. Brock Parks, who I was teamed up with last year, riding with Nakasuga on the Yart bike.
Yep.
Leon Haslam and Vandermark are doing pretty dang good too. So
Vandermark is a phenom this year, isn't he? I'm just amazed at how he almost came out of nowhere in a way.
Well, I don't remember the Suzuka 8-hour race last year, but I heard that when he won it last year with Leon, that's when things really seemed to turn around a bit for him. So
yeah, well, I have confidence is it's quite the motivator, isn't it?
Yeah, some days it is. That's for sure.
So, you were off at Mid-Ohio, a track that is absolutely notorious for sucking in the wet, and you got wet on your first day.
Yeah, it's notorious for sucking in the dry in the beginning. And, it's like the last couple of years we've gone there. It's always been the same thing. The first session, we're 6 to 8 seconds off the pace, and as rubber gets laid down, it gets progressively better pretty quickly. So, it's still difficult to get offline. The first day, every time it sprinkled and they sent us out to check it out, it was like starting from scratch. It was just like starting over. Track was unbelievable. I had come in a year or two ago convinced that the team had left the rear axle loose in the bike.
Mm.
That's how bad it is. So Riding in the rain was not an option. Hasn't been for a long time. We went through this back in 2006. I guess they just wanted to reaffirm it.
Yeah, I remember that. There were an awful lot of, shall we say, very angry racers in 2006.
Yeah, and so reaffirm that. And all things being considered, I thought that they did a good job of running a race. So Sunday was exciting. There was a lot going on. We still put on two good races, but I can tell you it was a little bit odd for all of us who were riding. Cameron and I both discussed that after the day was over, you know, we hardly remembered race one and felt like it was the day before. So it was just kind of an odd feeling, but overall for my team, for Monster Energy Yamaha, Graves Yamaha, we were, you know, the two of us got to clear off and decided amongst ourselves and splitting race wins and exciting finishes. You know, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. And yeah, I'm happy about how we're leaving there. Going to New Jersey, which is going to be another good racetrack for me. I think in 10 races we've run there, I've won 7 or 8 and crossed the finish line first in 9 of them, if I remember correctly. So got a jump start penalty in there somewhere.
Just back to Mido for a moment. One of the things that I've heard is, and but please correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're going to tell me right now I'm wrong and then let me say it. Thank you very much, Josh. Is that the sealer actually has a little bit more grip in the wet than the tarmac itself?
I don't know. I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
There are several different sealers, several different surfaces. And in my experience of my few laps around there, there was no actual rhyme or reason of why this spot was slippery and this spot wasn't. So it didn't, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
And I couldn't pick out like this surface is good, this surface is bad. It's this area was good, this area was bad. For reasons I don't know.
They sent 5 or 6 of you guys out on Saturday morning to try and assess the circuit and see if there was anything possible to run. And pretty much everybody, with the exception of the one guy that crashed, was totally untenable.
Well, I mean, I think he probably felt the same way too, honestly. I think that was it Frankie Babushka?
Yeah.
You know, not very many of us actually went out. A lot of people chose not to go out. And it was a really difficult situation for me.
Yeah.
Because it is very self-serving if I go out and say the track's bad and nobody wants to, and I don't want to race on it because I have a 40-point lead in the championship. And it works in my favor to not ride.
Right.
So I went out to just assess the track. I stayed out a lap longer than I actually wanted to give it a fair shake, try to just give it a chance. Came in, I was asked, I shook my head, and then I waited. And when Cameron, who's second in the series, says, dude, there's no way you can ride that, then it kind of took a lot of the pressure off of me.
Yep.
And, you know, Roger didn't even go out. So at that point, you know, it was like, okay, you know, at least everybody's in line with the same views and ideas. And it's good to be around a group of people where, you know, our lives and well-being are more important than putting all of us, you know, when there's only 12 to 15 of us left, putting any of us in danger by going around and riding on a racetrack that's just not fit to ride.
We've got to give a tip of the hat, too, to the fans that hung out, and especially the ones that came back on Sunday and got to see a hell of a show.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of them tried to stick it out as long as they could on Saturday, and AMA tried really hard to get us on the racetrack and make something happen, and we kept getting these silly showers that weren't even enough water to, you know, it was just enough water to wet the track, and it was amazing what that did to the track in a negative way. So I was thankful that the AMA used their heads and listened to the riders and did the best that they could. But when it was time to call it, it was time to call it. And I think that they made the right decision.
Yeah, I spent pretty much all Saturday listening to Barry Boone and Scott Russell on Fans Choice TV. And you could tell even with them, they were like, oh, this is not going well.
And even Sunday was difficult. I think one thing that's still missing is there's a little bit of communication missing out there. We had a couple of people, fans who showed up not knowing that the schedule had actually changed and that all the races were happening and happening earlier on Sunday. And they showed up for the standard time to watch a superbike race and missed everything. So
what do you think, just as a hypothetical deal, of having both superbike races on the same day?
I think that the schedule worked.
Yeah.
It worked, and we proved that it can work. I'm not a fan currently of the 2-day schedule where we race on Saturday.
Right.
We prefer 2 races on Sunday, similar to a World Superbike type of event.
Yep.
I don't think that that's going to happen. I think there are reasons beyond what I know and can be involved with that they want races to happen on both days. I would like to see, at the very least, a premier class do it that way. Maybe you run a couple of races on Saturday with support classes and then have a exciting super pole type of qualifying or knockout qualifying for Superbike, something to write about.
Yeah,
but then hold 2 races on Sunday, I think, is a better format. But I'm also of the belief structure of we need to, and you know, rather than fighting to get people to come, you're not. I think you're going to have a hard time getting new fans, people who don't know about motorcycle racing, to buy, you know, expensive 2-day tickets, come camp out or get a hotel for something that they don't know anything about. And if we focused on something more similar to the Supercross aspect, where we ask people to come out on Sunday afternoon, see fan walk, see 3 or 4 races, knock it out of the park for 4 hours and offer that to them for $20 to come out and see it in the afternoon and, you know, see an amazing show. You have Jumbotrons to make the road racing experience better, because road racing is hard to spectate because you cannot see much of the racetrack. Jumbotrons are a huge part of making the experience better. But you do a 4-hour show with a cool opening ceremony, start it with a fan walk, show them some great racing, get them involved. They're going to sit in the stands. They're going to ask the true hardcore fans that have been around forever, how did they set the grid? Oh, that happened yesterday. It was exciting. You should see this. And maybe they come back and do that next year. But right now, let's worry about getting new fans to come out and see that 4-hour show and introduce them to the coolest sport on earth.
You're pretty smart for Mississippi.
Yeah, but, you know, it's easy for me to sit here
I know. And see
all these things when I don't have the pressures of the people who are spending the money to hold a race at this event. Their bottom line is they need people in the gates both Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
So it's easy for me to sit back here and say these things of what I think need to happen. It's another thing to know all the things involved and actually go through changing policy. But I have become this person that, because of my experience, because I've been around the AMA paddock for 15 years, people want to look to me for advice and things start getting a bit political, and That's really not my thing. I have some ideas and I'll kind of say them, but I don't want to get involved in changing policy, I guess, because I just want to ride my motorcycle.
I have a feeling that next year is going to be very interesting, and I'll just leave it at that.
We've said that every year, though.
Yeah, I think this one might actually come true. So, you got anything as far as doing any wild cards? You're not, like you say, you just want to ride your motorcycle, but it'd be kind of fun to ride somebody else's motorcycle this year.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but I think right now I got a job to focus on. You know, I need to go to New Jersey, have a clean race, and then we'll kind of see what happens from there. But I don't think that there's anything, you know, there's nothing in the works, and I wish injury on no one.
Yep.
That they can't ride a motorcycle that would allow me to ride one. So, you know, right now I'm thinking about the job that I have at hand, and which is trying to wrap up championship number 4 And then I'm going to focus on trying to figure out how to beat Cam next year with a year's experience under his belt. So
you have what, a 45 point lead at this point?
40.
Okay.
Maintained 40. So if Cameron were to win on Saturday at New Jersey and I finish third, I think I can wrap that up.
So what do you do? Race two, you just kind of putt around.
Well, if I can take the pressure off for race two, then I don't have to think about anything except going fast and trying to win that thing. So.
Cam gave you a devil of a time in race one, man. It was fun to watch.
He did race two also.
Like, yeah.
Pretty suave kid. I was pretty taken aback by how quickly he got up to speed. I mean, here you go. Mid-Ohio, new track, cruddy track.
Yeah.
Bike he's never ridden around there before and still has very little experience on. And he's P2 in first practice and or in the top two or three. And then passes me, leads both races, maintains the pace. The pace didn't slow down.
Nope.
It stayed the same or got faster as the track got better for both of us. But I thought one thing that happened for both of us is when we were behind, we thought the pace wasn't that fast. And when you get to the front and think, okay, I'm going to go now. It was a little bit harder than you thought. It was kind of like riding a bicycle when you're drafting somebody. You're like, I feel great. They're going slow. I'm going to go to the front. Then you go up there and you get in the wind and you go, oh, nope. Pretty good. So it was a bit of that on the weekend. And
the pass we made in race two, I held my breath a little bit.
I don't know why. You think I ain't got that, bro?
No, I know you do, but it was close.
Close to what? Close to being amazing.
All right, golf clap. It was good stuff. It made for a great weekend. Besides being somebody that likes to talk to you for the show, I'm a fan. Sorry, can't help it. Besides, I can get you on the phone. I can't get Cam on the phone for shit.
Well, he's still young. You'll see. He'll come around.
I know.
He's actually preparing for a golf match against me. We got a little grudge match working up.
So, like golf on Saturday, you and me, and tennis on Sunday, and you can feel better about yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he loves some golf, and so I've been playing a bit lately too, and so. The last time we played together, it didn't go so well for him. And he's telling me, that wasn't my real game. I got game. And I'm like, whatever, dude. So it's been a bit of trash talking back and forth. And Ron Heben from Yamaha, you know, he's been right in the middle of it too. So I'm going to let him keep trash talking. And then I'm going to put the real pressure on him and say, hey, you want to put your race win bonus on the line and see how it goes, you know, and see how good you concentrate when you got that much money going on for a putt, you know?
So. In your honest opinion, and as somebody that spent a lot of time, obviously, seeing racers come up, for Cam, how far do you think he can go? Where do you think he should go?
I think Cam's, you know, level, in my opinion, his rise in riding kind of remind me of Nicky Hayden to me.
Okay.
What I remember him coming through, you know, just on another level. I think that we saw a little bit of Cam being human this year, had a hard time with a few things there in a little one part of the season, but all in all, he's a pretty suave little guy and a pretty good motorcycle rider. And I'm glad that I can still teach him a few lessons here and there with a few jabs to the guts, you know, but, I don't see why Cam's not going to be able to go to the highest level of motorcycle racing. I actually think that his riding style now probably suits, MotoGP, you know, or GP style of bike more than it does a super bike. But you know, right now there's a lot of things that are going to make it difficult for an American boy to move forward. And, I know there's a need for Americans in all these series, but there's a lot of young stars out there that the principals of all these teams are getting to see race week in and week out in Moto 2 and Moto 3 and World Supersport, World Superbike, where you know, now, even if they did want to look for an American, it's not like they could see him ride. They can't find it on TV very easily.
Right.
Different things like that. So it's not getting easier for him. As much as we all are hoping and wishing and wanting Josh Herron to do great, I think his struggles probably, you know, I can't help but think it hurts Cam's opportunities. Whether they are the same, different, whatever, you know, it's that some people are just as simple as, well, Josh Herron was the American champion. He's the best there is in America, and he can't cut it right now, which I think he can. I think there's got to be something more than just riding the motorcycle that's holding Josh back right now, and I really hope that he figures it out.
Have you talked to Josh number two since he went across the pond to race in Moto 2?
We've had some various text messages back and forth and chat a little bit, you know, and tried to send him some encouragement. I want him to do good as much as anybody in the world. And, you know,
there's only so much you can do, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I'm really not that involved in his program. So, you know, like I watch and, every time I turn on the timing, I'm watching with a lot of hope that today's the day that we start seeing the big improvement and he starts pushing his way forward. So hopefully he can figure out whatever it is that's holding him back, because I know Josh has got more than what he's shown in him. Sometimes getting it out is tough.
Yep. Well, maybe we should get you a Moto 2 ride and you have somebody to chase down.
it was funny because he was actually really, really sweet about that. Whenever he couldn't ride, when he broke his collarbone, he actually sent me a note. He goes, man, I wish you could ride this thing while I'm out, you know? So
yeah,
it was pretty nice of him, I thought. So he's had some kind things to say. And, like I said, I hope him the best for not just him, but for all of us racing here in America.
Yep. So you have the new house. You've been tearing up your motocross track pretty hard.
You know, Melissa's been actually rocking that thing a little bit more than me. So I've been working on my golf game, getting ready for Cam's grudge match.
you're probably more serious about that than actually training at this point.
Maybe. No. I'm just kidding. It's cool, you know. We got the moto track, and then we got the dirt the flat track down on the bottom. And we've had some friends come over and then ride a little bit, and then you take a dip in the pool, and then you play some ping pong and all kinds of fun stuff. So we're definitely enjoying it. And
you going to do the West Coast version of the Texas Tornado Boot Camp when you retire?
No, I don't think so. I think there's too many of those things out there as it is. So.
I don't know. Dude, I'd come down and tear it up myself. And I'd
rather just have my buddies come over and ride and hang out with us than put on camps personally. And I'm not quite as equipped as Colin. Colin's got a little more space than I do. And so, you know, I still have 5 acres, but I do have neighbors and stuff. And I did this stuff for personal reasons.
All right. What do you commonly ride around there?
Oh, we just have, we bought a slew of TTR 125s from Danny Walker at American Super Camp, you know,
okay.
From Danny, yeah. For a long time. And we just, we brought a handful of those here to the house.
Are you tuning them up or keeping them in relatively stock trim?
Man, I don't like working on stuff, so I'm keeping them stock.
I know. I hear some very interesting tales when I talk to Colin about what the instructors do to their quote unquote personal bikes there, and they cheat like mopos.
Oh yeah. When I showed up, which was Colin's very first camp.
Yeah.
You know, his was full cheater mode and everyone else was on a stalker. So.
And they're damn serious about the pole times. They don't mess around. I mean, they get basically pissed off if somebody else, you know, catches the time better than them. All right, man. Well, listen, New Jersey, obviously, as you said, a track that you favor. Going in with a 40-point lead is comfortable, but you can't be too comforted by the fact that Cam still has something and you never know what's going to happen. I wish you the best of luck. You look to be on chart to be the 2014 AMA Superbike champion.
I sure hope so. I want my number back.
So Cam won the Superbike shootout earlier this year.
But I won the championship still.
Well, that's true. there is that.
We me, him, and Martin, we each got a win.
Yeah. Yep. Well, hopefully that goes on next year. Wink, wink. I wish you the best of luck. Have a great time and end out the season in New Jersey. have fun. And also best to Melissa and Shalina in their 4-hour excursion this coming weekend.
Right. Yeah, that should be this evening. It's there's a Ustream link where you can actually watch the race in live timing. So
cool.
Yeah, I'll be watching that tonight.
Right on. All right. Well, make sure you get some sleep. Thank you for taking the time to talk to Motopod, man.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
You be well. Jim Race here for Motopod with an absolute fucking legend. Oh, by the way, you can cuss on the show. Jay Springsteen, who just had an epic battle. That must have been fun, man.
Oh, it was great. You know, I've always enjoyed racing with Chris. You know, you kind of know what we know what each other we're going to do, you know, as the race goes on and stuff. And it's been quite a while. I think it's been 2011 was the last time Chris raced, and I think it was 06 was the last time I've rode. So, you know, it's fun to come back out here and race on the mile racetrack. And it's, you know, it's just like anything else. You know, it only took me a few laps to get my rhythm back again, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was fun. I wish my mind says I can still race, but my body don't. You know, I say Arthur ain't bad, but right as he's a son of a bitch.
One of you two bobbled in like turn one and a half, and I was like, and I couldn't tell from the distance, but allowed whoever was behind to get back in front. I'm assuming that was you.
Yeah. There's a couple little ruts around the corner down there in one and two. And down 3-4 was pretty nice and smooth all the way around, you know, and then they're starting to get a nice blue line around there. So I was kind of go in on the rubber and drift it off and make more of a diamond out of the corner and get up in the cushion a little bit and turn it more on the gas and steer it with the rear wheel. And then I'd come off and I'd hit that blue line and it would just bog the engine down on that Harley and just yank so hard off the corner. And then it just made the straightaway seem like it was that much longer, and then I just had more straightaway speed, it seemed like, on him.
Was this a track that favored you in the past?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed racing at this track. A lot of times it's been like a nice big wide blue line around the bottom, you know, where you had to stay on the rubber. And this time they couldn't use calcium, I think it is, on the track because the horse people complain about it and stuff. So they just had to keep a lot of water and stuff in it, which the track kind of come apart a little bit, and then they left some ruts in the track, you know. So that was like a little bit of bobbles you see out there, the guys bobbling. Yeah. They hit them little tire ruts and stuff going around the corners, but... God, it was so much fun. I enjoyed it, you know.
I can see the smile all the way through your helmet.
Oh, yeah, that's what I told those guys. I could have made a Colgate commercial out there.
talk to me. We're primarily a road racing show. Mm-hmm. The one thing that actually stands out to me in the dirt track field is the Peoria TT. Yeah. That's nearly a road race on dirt.
Yeah, with a big old jump in it, you know. I always enjoyed riding my 750 there. When we switched and started riding the 500 and 600s, the little bikes, I didn't like it as much as I did by riding the big bikes, you know. I feel comfortable on my big bike.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel so comfortable on it, I feel at ease, you know. And that's why I just, like I said, 06 since I rode, and I went right back out there and, you know, and pulled the trigger on the thing, and it felt so comfortable, you know. I just... You know, hey, like Chris is a racer and I'm a racer, we like to win.
Yeah, you know? Nobody's going to give anything up.
But, you know, when I rode a road racer and then I would go back and ride my dirt tracker, I seemed like I could do so much more things on my dirt track bike, you know, because of the speed involved on a road racer, judging your distance getting in the corner,
right.
You know. And it just really helped me in both ways, you know, because a road racer, you have to learn to slide it on the pavement like you do on the dirt. You know, to go fast. You know, you watch these guys, this Mark Marcus kid is just amazing, you know.
like off the charts.
Just you know, he's in a league of his own right now, you know. And it's like when Scotty Parker and Ricky Graham, Bubba Schober, all these guys coming up too, you know, they when they got number one, they were like in a league of their own, you know. And then when I was number one, there was a lot of competition. You know, I think it was stronger competition when I was coming up than when, let's say, Scotty and some of these other guys. So I don't know. I know Scotty, he's freaking great. You know, he was a good racer and everything. But I don't know if he would have been Scotty Parker in that era when I was riding, you know. I just, you know, I mean, I see it, I feel it, you know. But, you know, that's just the way things are.
Did you manage to secure yourself a relatively comfortable retirement from your dirt track racing?
Yes. I had a paper route when I was a kid. And then I started racing motorcycles. And I waited till I was 55 to get, like, a real job. So I figured my life is half over. So I think everybody in the world's got it wrong, because when you're young, you don't want to go to work. Right. You know, when you're older, you don't mind going to work.
Well,
you know,
you almost can't call racing motorcycles work.
Well, turned into a job as my career went on. Yeah. Now, I mean, I work for a car dealership, and I haul all these retired dudes around to the car lots, and we go to the auctions and buy cars and stuff like that, and then we drive them back and stuff, and I detail them up, and I clean them and wash the engines and do stuff like this for Dave Knapp. And his son, Taylor Knapp, races in AMA Superbike stuff. You know, and they finished fifth last weekend at Mid-Ohio.
Indeed.
Yeah, he did really good job. Kid's good. You know, it's just, there's so many good riders and good talent out there, but there's only a few of them that make it, that have the people that stay behind them to keep them going.
AMA Pro Flat Track these days seems to be head and shoulders above AMA Pro Road Racing as far as things are going.
Right. Well, it's just so expensive.
Well, I know.
You know, to try to maintain one of these bikes. Now, all the electronics and stuff on the bikes and stuff,
It's not even the electronics. It's the cost of the people to make them work.
Right, You got to have an engineer, you got to have all these people to computerize stuff, Now they richen up the bike, they don't even get gas on their hands, to change the main jet and stuff,
Yeah, it's not so old school, is it?
No, I mean, that's the kind of the way I grew up,
Same here.
After I got done racing, me and Bill Warner started the Kawasaki team. Me and Gary Nixon had our pair of nines race team going. Then they did away with the series.
Right. You guys did that twin series that they were running for
a
while, right?
Yeah. And, God, it was so much fun. So much fun. The President Nixon, I wanted to choke him a couple times, But we were friends. He lived with me. When he worked for Tommy Cummins and the TCR team, on the dirt track stuff, and he would live at my house, and then he'd work on their dirt tracker stuff during the week, and then he stayed at my house, and we'd ride the jet skis, we'd go fishing and stuff. I tried to take him hunting. He just wouldn't sit still and stuff. He wasn't no hunter. But, God, we had so much fun doing that stuff, and then me and Bill Warner, we had our Kawasaki dirt track team. Now, it's been Harley's forever, right?
Yeah.
Winning all these dirt track stuff now. You look out here tonight in the main event, there'll be 8 Kawasaki's in the race,
I believe green, my friend.
Yeah. Hey, green's my favorite color, too. It's color of money.
Thank you.
But, Harley's, you got so much maintaining. There's so much maintaining to keep them engines running right and everything. Now they've taken
the size of a fucking saucepan.
Right. Well, then they've taken the restrictors out of the things now, so now it shortened the fuse on them more, too.
Yeah.
Well, then the Kawasaki's, we go to a mile dirt track race, we put maybe 65, 70 miles on it in one day. I mean, them things, they're like street engines. You don't even have to change the oil in them.
It doesn't blink.
No.
Yeah.
Harleys, I hate to say it, but they make metal when they run.
that's why they all have those magnetic oil plugs, right?
Yeah. But, hey, I mean, I enjoyed it. I raced for the Harley Factory 15 years, and they're great, super people. And just, to get opportunity to come back out here and do this with these people, it's super, Steve McLaughlin, approached me and to come out here to do this thing, and I jumped right on it right away. Sure, man, I'd love to come back out and ride. And then he had some health issues and stuff, so he couldn't make it. So he had Agajanians and these other people come in to take over the thing to keep the show going. And they're doing a super job. There's a great crowd. Hey, it's great to be here again.
I would love to see EBR pull out one of their 1190 RSs and bring those out to this. I don't think they'd be legal, but damn, that would be pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to get somebody to ride the thing, though, too,
Yeah, well, somebody brave like yourself, my friend.
Like I said, my mind says I can do it, but my body don't.
So,
I had to go up in the attic and find my steel shoe.
No shit.
Yeah, it was up in my attic in my garage.
Is it a Maitley?
Yes, it is. I wouldn't use nothing else. And,
nice.
And Ken's is not with us anymore, so yeah. That shoe's going to live with me for a while.
You spent a few laps around his track?
Yes, I did. He always tried to get me to ride a speedway bike out there, and I never did. You know, I wish I would have took the opportunity and maybe tried to ride one, but
yeah.
I just never did. I always rode a bunch of dirt track stuff, and I love, always loved riding road racers.
Maitley shoe.
So, you ever done any ice racing?
Yes, I live right on Inland Lake in Michigan, and I ride on every day in the wintertime. You know, I got five or six little Hunter Hondas, and all my buddies come out and ride, and you get done riding, your face is sore because you've been laughing and bumping handlebars with your buddies, and I have a 250 CR that I got some really cool tires on it, and we got them now so you can go right and left. Before, we always went in circles, you know, like flat tracking.
Yeah.
And I have a 1200 Honda Gold Wing.
Oh, no shit.
And I got studded up, and I built my own sidecar for this thing.
That's
me and my buddy.
That is so wrong.
And I got it all piped up. I got all four cylinders going into a big Rotex megaphone. It sounds like a damn hopped-up Volkswagen. And we ride it, and we get everybody, I let everybody ride it, and we get a little booze in my wife and my brother's wife, and then we get them out there too, and we cheer them on, and so much fun. We ride it every day, you know, and I park it in the behind the garage, and it sits there all summer long, and I ride it just in the wintertime.
Okay, you know what you got to get out there? A Honda CBX.
Yeah.
Six cylinders.
Yeah. They're too hard to come by. This Gold Wing, I think I got like $500 into it. and I ride it just stupid hard.
Yeah. It's still amazing. Do you use the heated hand grips?
No, but I still got the radio on the dash.
Nice.
Says.
All right, brother. Thank you for the
okay,
time.
Okay, hey, good talking to everybody. And then Springer Man says over and out. It was good and had a great time riding. Hope to see all you people one time in the future.
Right on. Thanks, bud.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed those two interviews from Jim. Nice to get a little bit of flat track and a little bit of dirt on the show. Hopefully we can continue that theme as time goes on. Thank you, Jim. On to Suzuka news. Last
race.
Weekend.
Big race.
Yeah, it's a whole 8 hours long as well.
Although this year it was only, I think it was 6 hours and something like 35 minutes because the start was delayed by rain and they have to end at a specific time. So it wasn't quite 8 hours.
And do they have safety cars as well out?
Yeah, there were three.
Slows things down a bit.
There were three or four, I think. Obviously, there was no legitimate live video feed, but Leon Haslam, his Twitter, and Bridgestone, both of their Twitter feeds were excellent for updates.
Brilliant.
On what was happening.
And it was Leon's wife, Ollie, that was running it, not Leon doing a running commentary as he was going around. Ollie was fantastic. I think I saw Jake Harrison from Monster, congratulate her. I think there was something like 117 tweets that she put out across the 8 hours, which isn't a lot over 8 hours, but when you consider that I would suggest that 75% of them were in the last hour.
Yeah.
The fingers were working overtime, bless her.
Yeah, there's not too much to say in an endurance race other than this person has crashed and during the middle section, you know? It's not like
yes.
We've completed another lap and another.
Congratulations. We're now 3 weeks ahead of the team following us. No, it's an interesting weekend for Suzuka. The humidity,
I
the
would
heat.
Love to go.
Oh, yeah, me too. And, you know, Japan's somewhere I'd love to visit. I'm not huge on culture and change. It's about as alien to me as anywhere could be because I don't like any of the food, but I am quite polite.
Oh, so
you
British.
Know, so it we absolutely, yeah, no
oh
question. I've been here 41 years. I like it. I've kind of grown used to it.
Oh Lord!
But yeah, somewhere I'd love to experience Japanese culture, but take a packet of Monster Munch or something with me.
Oh God.
I'm terrible with food. I really am. But that's another story. That's for another day. I'm going to bore the listeners with my meat and two veg. Okay. Don't go there. We'll carry on with Suzuka. A plethora of names for Suzuka again this year. Kevin Schwantz returning. The World Supersport, I believe, championship leader. Michael van der Mark. Yep. Leon Haslam. Johnny Ray. Josh Brooks, a debut for Tommy Bridewell, with the obviously the smattering of Japanese riders as well, including Kageyama, including Nori Haga, and also Dominique Agata were out there as well, which is good to see. Josh Waters, Randy Depunier. So a good cross-section of riders from British Superbikes, from World Superbikes, from MotoGP, and Moto2. It shows that the prestige in which the race is held. Obviously, it's a big one for Honda, always has been. Mm-hmm. And as we alluded to earlier on, a lot of the superbikes used to go an awful a lot quicker after the Suzuka 8-hour and long-term tests were done on some of the parts. But the story of Suzuka for 2014 unfortunately started on a bit of a low point for Kevin Schwantz returning after Aoki crashed on lap 6, regrettably breaking all the fingers on his left hand.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough.
6 laps in and destroyed the bike.
Oh, yeah, you just breaking can't. All your fingers. Imagine just like getting up and all your fingers are bent the wrong way. Oh,
yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, that's gonna sting for a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But to be fair, if he hadn't have broken all the fingers but still been the bike, maybe Kevin Schwantz would have still broken his fingers by the time he got back. So it was better to do it on the bike than having the world champion stamp all over them for crashing the bike. So yeah, this disappointment for Kevin and Aoki and the team. But out at the front, it was Johnny Ray, who set the early pace again for the second year in succession with Akiyoshi. It was Lorenzo Zanetti, wasn't it?
Yeah, he wasn't racing. He was just a reserve rider in case one of them got injured or something like that happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because at Suzuka, I'm not really sure. Yeah, every team
two riders, not three.
Well, but that's the thing, is most teams do run three riders, but then some only run two. So I'm not really sure. I know that in three-rider teams, it seems usual that one of the riders only does a one-hour stint and the other two riders do the other 7 hours. So I'm not sure what the difference between two and three riders is, because you'd think that three riders would be better because they're fresher. But, who knows?
Yeah, you would say so. You would say so. But the legend of Yoshimura Suzuki Shell Advance team of Kevin Schwantz, Sugimoto, and Nobuatsu Aoki. Is it Nobuatsu, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's N-I-O-K-I. Anyway, if it was Nobuatsu, it's another blast from the past. Unfortunately, that completed just the 5 laps as the Aoki crashed on lap 6, disappointingly.
As you were kind of talking about, Jonathan Rea and Akiyoshi, they were leading for a fair bit of the race. They'd extend their lead, then there were a couple of safety cars, so they got reeled back in. Obviously, last year, it was Jonathan Rea and Ryuichi Kiyonari, and Kiyonari crashed and destroyed the bike. So Jonathan Rea lost the 8-hour after that. And this year, in a similar circumstance, Akiyoshi crashed the bike. Akiyoshi broke his femur, but in true endurance racing spirit, managed to push/ride the twisted bike along the service road with a broken femur back to the pits, just so the team could have a chance to go back out.
One tough bastard.
Yes. The team did go back out. Lorenzo Zanetti did come in as a reserve rider. Him and Rea managed to finish in 40th place after their crash, but Akiyoshi crashing and pushing a motorbike with a broken femur is pretty insane.
Yeah, he takes the medal of Rider of the Week for me.
Yeah,
just for doing that.
Maybe even Rider of the Year. That's properly hardcore. I mean, I thought it was pretty hardcore when Ellison broke his femur, managed to stand up and sit on a hay bale.
Yeah, and rub his leg going, ooh, that hurts.
Yeah, but no offense to Ellison, this kind of makes that look not as impressive.
No, because James didn't get back on.
Yeah.
But that, if that was a rider that wasn't Japanese, would they have done the same thing? A Japanese rider at Suzuki on the main Honda. At Suzuka, sorry, on the main Honda. You would think there's an awful lot of honour involved in that for riding for the FCC Technical Sports Racing Honda. So
Maybe if it was one of the usual endurance riders, but if it was someone, if it was one of the riders who they bring in as an air quotes wild card for Suzuka, yeah. Probably not.
Maybe. Possibly not. I know we're assuming a little bit, but it's less likely that they would.
Yeah, maybe just cut your losses and realize you have a broken femur.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm going to the hospital to save the embarrassment of going back into the pit. And so I'm sorry for crashing your bike and screwing your Suzuka up for the second year in succession.
Yeah, but and again, a lot like last year, Leon Haslam, Michael Vandermark, and Takumi Takahashi and their Musashi Hark Pro Honda team went on to win thanks to the FCC Honda crashing out. That is their second win, back-to-back. And if I were Honda, I would be looking at Michael Vandermark rather than Jonathan Rea to make the jump from World Supersport / World Superbike and into MotoGP.
I think that's going to be the case. I think that's the route they're going to take. You know, again, we said about youth previously.
This is a perfect example.
Absolutely right.
You know,
Johnny has been too loyal to Honda for too long.
Loyalty, unfortunately, does not always pay off.
No, it doesn't. Regrettably, I don't think in this, as somebody who's coming through with at the pace that Vandermark's coming through, yeah, you couldn't have seen that 2 years ago. But now the balance of power is slightly changing into the Dutchman's favour.
Yeah,
great for Leon Haslam to win back to back. Great for him to be back on that podium again. When we spoke to Ron Haslam last year at the race school last September, we were discussing the relative merits of Leon and Suzuka and how it's not transposed, that the form at Suzuka isn't transferred to World Superbikes, even though he's on a Honda. The difference?
Bridgestones and fancy spec Honda, I'd imagine, plays into it a bit too.
It's the black round rubber things.
I think it was
He struggles to get on with Pirellis.
Six of the top seven riders at Suzuka were running Bridgestone tyres.
Yes. Which are obviously not far off MotoGP spec.
No, I think all the tyres that, certainly all the tyres that Bridgestone brought were all made just for the Suzuka 8-hour.
Yes.
So yeah, you'd guess that they're probably closer to a MotoGP tyre than they would be to
a Pirelli World Superbike spec.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I remember last year Leon saying he's never been able to lean over so far in the wet as he did on the Bridgestones last year.
Well, that's the thing. During this year's 8-hour, it was obviously drying at the start, and there were a couple of spits and spats of rain during the race. But they could stay out on slick tyres for a fair bit longer than they could. It's in a MotoGP race. So clearly there is some really hot stuff technology going into the tyres as well as the bike for the 8-hour.
So where did Bridgestone go? Where did Bridgestone go then when they come out of MotoGP and they're putting all this R&D into their race tyres?
I think they're going back to F1.
There's one to ponder.
I think they're going back to F1, I seem to remember.
Oh, okay.
I think F1's getting a tyre war again, maybe?
Oh, that'll halt things. That'll wind things up a bit. Because, again, they're dominated by Pirelli at the minute, aren't they?
Pirelli's a sole tyre manufacturer. But, yeah.
They've had a good run, but I think it's time to bring back tyre wars.
Yeah, definitely. It makes things a bit interesting, as you say.
Fly in those Saturday night specials.
Maybe not that far.
Okay.
But yeah,
Second place.
Yeah, second place was Yoshimura Suzuki, which was Randy Depugne, who's having quite a successful career after MotoGP. It looks like he'll stay on as a Suzuki test rider and probably keep doing some endurance events. He is French, after all. They seem to love endurance.
Yeah, they do.
He was teammates with BSB winner Josh Waters and Tetsuda. Then in third was Team Kagayama, which was Dominic Agata, Noriyuki Haga, and Kagayama. Little bit of fun fact was Haga was a bit annoyed because Dominic Agata got to run the main stints, whereas Haga was pushed back to the air quotes third rider position with only one stint in the 8-hour race.
Whoops.
Yeah, but that's also, you know, that's also impressive
that's
for Agata.
Feather in the cap for, yeah, feather in the cap for Dominic Agata for keeping Hager out of the way.
Yeah, Hager's...
To prove he can ride a superbike over as well as a Moto2 bike.
Yeah, that was Dominic's first time at Suzuka. His first time, on that superbike. I mean, I'm sure he's ridden superbikes at track days, but it's probably his first time properly racing one. And to be faster than Noriyuki Hager, someone who's raced superbikes almost his entire career and has been very good at it, that's impressive.
Yeah. And Yukio Kageyama, I mean, what, Hager and Kageyama, they must have a combined age of 45, nearly 50. 85, yeah. Nearly 90, sorry. Both of them are in the early to mid-40s.
Yeah, easily. So
impressive.
Yeah, it is. So hopefully that'll open some doors for Dominic Agata with Suzuki maybe in a couple of years in MotoGP.
Yeah, very good.
One to watch.
Yes, so excellent run. And again, a tip of the cap to Wiggy San for putting all the tweets and the feeds and the links together that he did for us last week, which helped everybody keep top side of what was going on in the land of the rising sun.
Yes, definitely. And just a quick special mention to the Monster Energy Yacht team. They came in fourth and they were running Brock Parks, Josh Brooks and Nakasaga. One of them is a current MotoGP racer. One of them has had a MotoGP podium. And then Josh Brooks is obviously a BSB front runner and potential world superbike rider next year.
I love the way you're going through that. Parks is current MotoGP. Nakasaga has had a podium. And there was Josh Brooks.
Josh Brooks is a good rider. It's just that...
I know. He's a damn good rider.
He's not MotoGP.
Yeah, no. No, he isn't. And he's early 30s, so he's way past the threshold of age for MotoGP. But I do suspect he will be in World Superbikes next year in some form or another for some manufacturer or another. Talk about hedging your bets.
Speaking of BSB, there's a couple of...
Seamless...
There's a couple of bits of BSB news. I'll let you tackle these because you obviously have a better grasp of BSB than I do.
Only slightly. The World Superbike Bimota Alstari team have a junior section, and that's Christophe Ponson. Forgive my pronunciation on that. My French isn't the best. But the Bimota Alstari, the junior team, are joining BSB for the next three rounds. That's the old airfield circuit at Thruxton. They're back to Alton Park the following week, and then 2 weeks after that to my local circuit at Cadwell Park. That'll open his eyes a little bit. he thinks he's seen something. He ain't seen nothing yet. But again, it's a kudos to BSB for securing a team of this standard, who is basically the World Superbike Junior team, and it also shows the intent that Francis Batter and his Alstari outfit are putting behind the Bimota to get them experience across Europe, and again as part of development for the bike itself. Ponson's only 18, recently competed in the European Superstock 1000 and 600. Championship, and the team is owned by one Benjamin Batter, which we would suggest is potentially the son of Francis Batter, but we stand to be corrected on that one, but we will have a look.
That's a good
and
family
confirm
business
that next
have.
Week. Isn't it just?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if Dad said, you know, you need to take over the family company. You need to run these race bikes. Bit more exciting than you need to take over the family bakery or whatever.
Yeah.
Not that my dad's a baker, but anyway.
No, neither's mine. But as you say, it's that way inclined, isn't it? So, yeah, another team on the grid. It'd be interesting to see how they go. A young, fast rider. Good. Over the next three rounds, we'll report back
bike,
on that.
You know?
Another manufacturer.
And obviously with BSB being a slightly closer to stock spec than World Superbike, it does make it a bit easier to enter and run towards the front on a... bit more limited budget.
Yes, it does.
Limited testing.
It does. And Ponson's no mug. He can race. So it'd be interesting to see what he can bring to the table. We'll report back on that next week, post-Thruxton. And also in a little bit more BSB news, we have some Americans coming over. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, there seems to be a flood of Americans to BSB in the last... 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, James Rispoli coming over, and we had Danny Aslick at the start of the season. John Hopkins obviously is over, and obviously last season, the dearly departed Tommy Aquino with Brent Gladwin's WD-40 squad. It's the place to be. And that place to be is bringing the Road Race Factory. They're coming over with Jake, and forgive my pronunciation on this, American listeners, Jake Gagne and Thomas Puerta. So the Road Race Factory Red Bull team, they're coming over to race in the UK. Now, I don't know when. Are they coming over for final two rounds for Silverstone and for Brands? Yeah, rounds 11 rounds. And 12.
And Jake Gagne is a former Red Bull rookie, so he's no mug. He's raced on an international level. I think he was somewhat successful in Red Bull rookies. So it'll be interesting.
I know I'd heard the name somewhere before, but I couldn't quite pin it down.
He was in that kind of what year was it? It was it must have been 2007-2008-ish. There was a huge surge of American Red Bull rookies. There was the likes of Gillingham Hayden, I think, was another one. There was Gagne. There was Cameron Beaubier. Then you also had what was his name? Bonsley. He was teammates. He was teammates with Danny Webb, but that was in 125s, and I think that was a bit later.
You're testing my knowledge now, mate.
But he was part of that kind of. There was just a sudden flood of Americans into the lower classes. And then after Red Bull rookies, he didn't really have enough money to stay in Europe. So it was, unfortunately, back to America.
Which is a bit of a shame. The team boss, Danny Walker, has said, this is going to be an incredible undertaking for us, but it's something that we've actually wanted to do since season one. Our mission at the Road Race Factory has always been to develop riders that can compete with the best in the world, regardless of the series. We're going over here to show what our riders are capable of and our program can produce. We're also going to explore more opportunities to grow our program and investigate the viability of possibly competing in a full season overseas. The bottom line is that we seek to promote American riders and provide them with a path towards an international series. It's been our vision all along, and we're excited that it's finally been given the green light. And Danny, you are more than welcome over here, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up at either Silverstone or Brands. I'll come knocking on your door.
Yeah, hopefully you're listening. Maybe you can
hope so. Everybody listens to Motopod.
Exactly.
Just some are in denial. Just some listen more than others.
And hopefully people are still listening now, because that's pretty much all the news we have, isn't it? Or are there?
It is. No, it is. No question. That's a wrap.
As we said before, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, praises, criticism, anything like that, feel free to shoot us a message at motopod@motopodcast.com. Things will probably get a bit more intense in the next couple of weeks as the season starts up again. So hopefully we'll be able to sneak one or two bits of listener feedback in there.
Certainly.
But do know that even if we don't reply, we've definitely read your email. And unfortunately, life sometimes just gets a tiny bit too busy to reply, and, you know, sometimes things stack on top of each other. But every email is read and is very much appreciated, even if it's negative. We still, you know, still learn from it. So please do send us in anything and everything.
Hear, hear. And if I could just add to the end of that, I did put a tweet out earlier on that we were doing the show, and TZ John replied, who's a long-term listener to the show. I put a tweet out saying, time for a Motopod show, I reckon. Are you ready, Harry Lloyd? And Jesus, John replied, yes, hurry up. I'm off to Alton on Friday for Carfest. I'm camping now and I'm all podded out. So TZ John, I hope you enjoyed listening to that one. That one was for you, mate. And one day we'll hopefully catch up. For everybody else listening, thank you very much indeed for downloading. We'll be back again next week, all being well, with a bit of a review from BSB at Thruxton. And I look forward to the Red Bull Indianapolis MotoGP.
Yep, we'll see you then. Hopefully there'll be some more silly season news. And bye for now.
Bye-bye.
wonderful.
Who's Brad the Baker Bullitt?
He was the AMA flat track champion, but then he broke his arm at Colin Edwards' boot camp.
So isn't he Brad the Bullitt Baker?
Oh, I don't know. It's fucking nicknames. Who cares?